Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Listen, talk radio is primarily political. Let's start with that. However, I try to give you more than politics. I try to give you a versatile show, and many of you say, oh, Mike, We know where you stand politically. Tell us more stories about Teddy. Tell us, how much can I tell you about Teddy? So I'll tell you about Teddy. No, I don't have anything to tell you about Teddy. I'll tell you another story, just for the heck of it, since I need a breather myself. My head's spinning. Why? We had a family gathering, a mini family gathering over the last 3 days. Someone I love dearly came up, and you know how obsessed I am with food, right? I am like a starvation case compared to this individual who puts me to shame in terms of the obsession with food. We have been eating for 3 days straight. I've been giving food away to anyone I could find. Bags of bagels, packages of smoked salmon. Chinese food was given away in trays. This is astounding. No one could believe the amounts of food that were ordered. I'm sick from it. I need to have my stomach pumped from the last. I mean, this weekend I'm going to basically spend in bed trying to purge the food we've been eating. I've never seen anything like this. You say, well, okay, what's so funny about that? Nothing. There's nothing funny about it. That's just the point. So what is this all about? The answer is, this is family. You get together over a meal. You break rice together. You argue for 3 days straight. What could be better? What could be better than to argue over the drop of a grain of rice? Nothing could be better than that. That's family life. You see, if you think that family life consists of life with father and everyone gets together and it's you hold hands and you pray to the Lord and yes, Father, I love you and yes, Mother, may I help you and yes, Son, you're wonderful and yes, Daughter, you're great. Well, you don't know what real life 101 is, because family life is strife life. Family life is strife life, and the faster you know that life is strife to begin with, the less trouble you're going to have with life. That's life 101. Anyone who tells you that you're supposed to have a smooth ride, life is not a bed of roses. Anyone who promises you that is sending you down the road of disappointment, frustration, and medication. The day you learn that life is strife, life is disagreement, life is arguing with people and coming to a conclusion without violence, then you're on the road to understanding what life really is. Life is struggle. That's all. It's as simple as that. So if this sounds like something you already heard, I can't help it. Sometimes the simplest things are the truest things. You understand that? Now let's get back to regular programming. How come you've tuned out of politics? How come you have tuned out of politics? Lou on WOR, you're next up. Go ahead, please.
Michael, I'm tuning out of politics because we are all being inundated by so much garbage from this administration on a daily basis that as a human being, you can only absorb so much of this crap. So I'm taking a step back, waiting for the election, and hopefully we're going to run this guy out on a rail in November.
So, wait, so you're confirming what I suspect, which is you don't even want to hear what Obama does next because you wouldn't be shocked by it.
Not at all. I wouldn't be shocked by anything.
Okay, so you're saying I understand he's bad. I understand he's a devious guy who's out for as much power as he can get. They're corrupt. They're robbing the Treasury blind. What can I do about it? I have one chance. That's November. Until then, I don't even want to hear about it anymore. Is that basically what you're saying?
That's basically it, Michael, and as far as I can see, what this guy gets away with, he makes Al Capone blush in his grave. Not turn over and do circles, he makes him blush.
I've never seen anything like this, and I've also never seen such a media cover-up like this. No. Never. Never. It's astounding. It's astounding.
These people, these journalists, they're an embarrassment, an absolute embarrassment. They're cheerleaders.
Yeah, no, the journalism schools were taken over 20 years ago by three different men. I knew all three of them. I didn't know them personally. These were all hardcore radicals on the order of Reverend Wright. They run the journalism schools in this country, and they handpick the stooges that are allowed to go through them and graduate so they can control them like puppets. So that's why we have a compliant press. But Lou, having said what you said, that there's too much corruption, you don't want to hear any more about Obama scandals, you know what he is, you know that he's basically trashed the White House and America, you know that he stabs us in the back at every turn, you know he laughs at us behind our back, you know all of this. What then would you tune into talk radio to hear till November?
Michael, you make my wife and I laugh, and you also, you know, you fill the airwaves with wisdom, whether it's quoting from the Bible, whether it's quoting from your personal life, whether it's the Italian guys that helped rescue you on the boat that time from the guy that was going to try to do something. I mean, it's one thing after the other, whether it's the other guy.
Oh, you remember that one little story when a guy got nasty and some Italian kid came over and threatened to beat him up for me?
Well, there were three guys. I think you said they were all from Brooklyn, and they approached.
Yeah, they were. I've never saw that guy again. I mean, we called each other, we emailed each other a few times. I never saw him again. He was a great guy. He said, he didn't even know me. I remember he came over. He said, "Hey, Mike, is this guy bothering you?" You should have seen the three of them run back into their sailboat, the smarty little liberals with their headbands.
Right, and I'll tell you, Michael, those are the guys. You, the wise man once said, "The world we grew up in is no longer here." That wise man is you, and those guys from Brooklyn, and my uncles that are no longer here. The colorful characters that I grew up with are no longer here. That's why I tune into you. You're my colorful uncle that I grew up with, Michael.
Well, Lou, I got to tell you, unfortunately, you make me a little nervous and sad when you say that. I know that's true. In many ways, I'm one of the last people standing from that generation, certainly in the media. You know, the time has gone by very fast, Lou. To me, I don't want to get maudlin right now, but 1994 is when I began in radio. I was already a man with three previous successful careers. I went into radio late in life. I never thought I would last this long, nor did I ever expect I'd still be here standing on earth to begin with. And here I am standing strong as from the day I started, and I haven't really changed my politics. But when I see the media landscape and I realize that most of the other fellows, even on the conservative side, are like 20 years my junior, I realize that I'm in a very special position. You understand that, don't you?
I don't know what your listeners would do without you, Michael, to be honest. I mean, it's you're a breath of fresh air, your insight into things, your intellect, and I'm not just trying to butter you up. But
no, it's because I'm an older person who's lived a very full life so far. Unless you have a wife and children and a family and you have that, you really shouldn't even be in talk radio, to be frank with you. And I'm not knocking anyone in particular. Unless you have had children, you have no right talking about family values. Am I right or wrong about that?
Right about that, Michael. And by the way, we love your stories on Teddy, of course. We have three dogs of our own, and we love them.
Oh, this is great. Okay, my friend Lou, if you name it, you gain it. What's the book?
Trickle Down Poverty.
Okay, you get it anyway. It's very hard. The winner was Trickle Up Poverty. Now this is Trickle Down Tyranny, and I want everyone who bought the poverty book to buy the tyranny book.
Savage.
The Russians want him to dramatically back down on missile defense. The president's essentially saying, give me some space till the election. I've got a lot more flexibility after the election. What do you think he's saying? The question it raises is, how many countries, whether it's Iran or somewhere else, has he had a similar conversation with? You know, let me pretend I'm tough long enough to get reelected, then I'll take care of you.
I was reading an article with regard to panic on the myth of the 8-hour sleep per night. And it says, we often worry about lying awake in the middle of the night, but it could be good for you. A growing body of evidence from both science and history suggests that the 8-hour sleep may be unnatural. Who am I glad to hear that? Whew. Whoa, missed that bullet. I have not had an 8-hour night without waking and stirring in my entire adult life. In fact, all of the health literature that your doctor has given you on virtually everything is wrong. I discovered this in my 30s when I had insomnia. I read a self-help book in my 30s that said, hey, hold on a minute. Just because you wake up in the middle of the night doesn't mean there's something wrong. It means you're not tired. So get up and do something. And then the self-help books showed you what you could do in 2 minutes. You could write this. You could write that. You could walk around the block. Well, of course, not in San Francisco because the Occupy thugs will get you. But you could do things in the middle. You could look at the stars. You can get a telescope and learn the star formations. A lot of things you could do in the middle of the night, in other words. You might even read a book, God forbid. God forbid you might get one of those antiquated items between two covers with print in it and read one of them. But it turns out, in people who've studied sleep in the past, it's amazing. A man did research on this, and it said that humans used to sleep in two distinct chunks. Would you believe this? And they had sex at certain times, too. People often had sex. A doctor's manual from 16th century France even advised couples that the best time to conceive was not at the end of a long day's labor, but, quote, after the first sleep, when they have more enjoyment and do it better. That's in the 16th century. We don't want to mention that around Rick Santorum. He may have to burn that book. But apparently there were first and second sleeps that disappeared during the late 17th century. And first and second sleeps occurred as a sleeping pattern around the world. You know what first and second sleeps are? This is very interesting. They fall asleep for a couple hours, and then they get up, and they do certain things, hang out, talk, right? And then they go back to sleep a second time. But we have adapted to the idea that we should sleep in an eight-hour block. But I think many of us don't sleep for eight straight hours because our natural bodily rhythm is for segmented sleep as opposed to one long sleep. It's very interesting. And speaking of a long sleep, it seems America is in a long sleep.
I'm going down to Louisiana, honey, behind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Another 4 years of Obama. Mm-hmm. Free guitar strings for everyone.
I'm going down to Nevada.
Going to Nevada to do some gambling. Get me a pretty girl there now. I got the travel passes from Obama. I'm going to get me one. Them girl Nevada. Oh, Louisiana. Sorry. Louisiana. I thought he said Nevada. What's down in Louisiana? That's where the refinery is that Obama doesn't want to send the oil to. you know, I was talking about the dead man's pants, so I actually wore pants that were hand-me-downs. They were not hand-me-downs. They were from Stiffs. I told you my father used to buy estates, so to speak, estates. Poor people. You go in and buy the whole household goods. The widow wanted to get rid of the old man's junk, you know, so including the clothing. And he'd bring home the clothing. And I knew it was a killer for me. Every time he'd bring home a good pair of pants, I knew it was coming. He'd say, take a look at this fabric. I dreaded the moment when he'd say, take a look at this fabric. And he would roll out the pants on his arm like a clothing salesman. He would say, this is some fabric. We're not going to throw this out. The next thing I knew, 2 days later, they were shortened at the knee like Abbott and Costello. Not taken in the behind. And there I was. I swear there's a picture of me, but these are such shabby pants. I was going to ask you a question on the show, which, by the way, Jerry Lewis celebrated his 86th birthday. Always been one of my, I love the guy. I love everything he's ever done since I've been a little kid. I can't believe he's 86. He survived that with the, you know, when he had the steroids and he's puffed. Remember that? He survived that. He had his party in the Friars Club. I'm not having in the Friars Club. Obviously, anyway, so here I was going to ask, poverty I was going to talk about. There is no poverty in America. You realize that. What is poverty? You know what poor is? Poor is not America today. Poor is hunger. I've tried to define what poverty is. First of all, you know there's no hunger in America. Between food stamps and government cheese, there is no hunger in America. It's a complete lie of the liberals. Poverty today is more or less gone in America. There are poor people. But most poor people live better than most middle class, lower middle class people did 100 years ago, 80 years ago, 70 years ago. So I want to ask you, if you were poor as a child, would you describe for the Savage Nation audience what your poverty really was like? What was poverty? What did it mean? I mean, we were poor. I didn't miss a meal in the sense we're poor, but I was never hungry. I was overfed. I had garbage clothing, you know, hand-me-down clothing. I lived in a tenement in the Bronx, and across the street I thought it was paradise because there were roses growing on a fence. But I look at it now with pictures of it. There was like it was a, you know, littered, garbage-strewn lot. You know what I'm saying? I can still smell the ailanthus plants, if you know what those are. walking through the woodlot. We'd play jungles and trail each other. I remember they set a kid on fire. Oh, there were some bad kids in that neighborhood. One of them wound up shot to death. He became a Hell's Angel. The other one was his brother died in an electric chair. I won't even mention their names. They were really mean. But there was a kid in the neighborhood with red hair, and for some reason they picked on him, and they tied him to a tree. I remember to this day. And they started dancing around him, going, and they started a fire at his feet. They tried to set him on fire until his father came running, or a neighborhood man ran out and put the fire out and chased the kids away. They were nuts. You talk Lord of the Flies. It was amazing. So I'd be curious, if you were poor, I'd like to hear what poverty really was like, because I don't think anyone knows what poverty is in America. Today you think poverty is, oh, I only have a house and I don't have a country house. Or we're poor because what? What's about? Most people are not really that poor. What is poverty? I would like to hear, and I'd like to spend one segment from you, the audience, the Savage Nation, for a moment. It's not political at all. It's not going to be to bash this one, lift up that one. Now, if I say Ryan, you know, Ryan's budget plan, most people don't even know who he is. Oh, yeah, that young fella, Ryan, he has a very nice, he has a nice game show. I know, I like that Ryan. He's a good guy. No, no, we're talking about an actual congressman with a plan that has about as much chance to succeed as I do of having my book up here on Fox News, Trickle Down Theory. He has as much. So, were you poor as a child? Florida, Judy, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
I have to disappoint you. I came from a comfortable family.
Thank God.
Yeah, well.
I wanted to be comfortable because I remember when I hear my parents discussing other people's income, which everyone did, by the way, behind closed doors. They would whisper and say they're very comfortable. I didn't know what that meant was. I knew we weren't. That's all I knew.
No, we never worried because my dad was a successful attorney.
Oh, a lawyer in those days was as close to God as you can get?
Judge, when he died, and he was very well thought of.
He was a judge? A judge? A judge, a jury, and an executioner. Hold on, we're going to take your story in a moment. If you were poor, tell us about it on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
God's help, the countdown button for the destruction of the Zionist regime has been pushed by the hands of the children of Lebanon and Palestine. By God's will, we will witness the destruction of this regime in the near future.
That is not an Occupy protester. That is Ahmadinejad, the Hitler of our time. He said that a few years ago. He repeats it over and over again. And yet CNN had him on the Slimy Limey show. And the Slimy Limey, instead of confronting him for his genocidal insanity, asks him the following. I want you to listen to this. This is the Slimy Limey. Listen.
How many times in your life, Mr. President, have you been properly in love?
I'm in love with all of humanity. I love all human beings.
That might be the best answer.
But in particular, I love members of my own family, of course, like any other human being.
That's probably the best answer I've had to that question. You can't beat them.
Filthy Brit, you. You lowlife. You lowlife, you. Mr. Hitler, when did you become a vegetarian? Asks Piers Morgan. Mr. Hitler, what is your favorite Bavarian pastry? Is it the cream pie? Mr. Hitler, do you and Eva plan to tie the knot in the near future? Mr. Hitler, do you prefer riding pants to slacks? Mr. Hitler, what was the most difficult part about your childhood? Mr. Hitler, do you trim your mustache on a regular basis? Mr. Hitler, can we look forward to more swastikas in the next fall's fashions? That would be Piers Morgan were it 1939 other than the year 2012. I mean, I never thought I'd see history repeating itself, but it is. It's the train tracks to Auschwitz are being laid down, and men like Piers Morgan are those with the hammers and the nails driving them into the train tracks, driving them into the cross ties. Every time you appease a genocidal maniac like this, what you're doing is adding another rail to the death camps. Where's the ADL?
that did not come to my defense when I was thrown out of England. Wouldn't even write a letter. I'm not going to talk about it anymore. I can't. The president, the child president, goes before the UN and goes before the UN degenerates and apologizes for violence against Muslims and says, we didn't do it. It was the video. Listen to the child president, clip 10.
I have made it clear that the United States government had nothing to do with this video. And I believe its message must be rejected by all who respect our common humanity.
What an empty
it is
suit.
An insult not only to Muslims, but to America as well.
You know, what an insult. What an empty suit you are. What an empty suit. You can hear the hollow voice. T.S. Eliot, the hollow man. The straw man. There he is. The straw man in person. Video. Libby itself said it wasn't a video. And he's going on with the big lie. So I rest, Mike. There's nothing more I can say. I'm not going to talk about it anymore. I'll tell jokes instead. Train Tracks went to number 43 in humor books in one night. From number 25 million to 43. So if you like jokes and humor and something pleasant for the holidays, buy my book Train Tracks on Amazon now. What else you want me to give you a meatball recipe? Hey, Mike, give us a meatball recipe. Pauline in New York on WR. Go ahead, please.
Yes, hi, Mike. I was interested to find out if you're going to be doing any excerpts, readings from Train Tracks from your
yes,
book. And if you're going
dear,
to be...
I am. I can give you a hint of Train Tracks. You want a hint of what's in it?
Yes.
Okay, I'll give you a hint. Let me see if I can hear contents. Here's the introduction. I really was poor. That was story one. Then you got Boy in the Basement, Hegira from New York, an American gangster in Spain, Setting a Peanut Man on Fire, Pennies for Beethoven, The Speculator in a Garden of Numbers, and My Silent Brother. Those are the first seven stories out of a total of 35 stories.
Wow.
In Train Tracks. Yes. They're all new.
Are you
which
do
one
a play?
Of all of those I just read, which one struck you as the most interesting title? What comes back? Anything?
Pennies.
For Beethoven.
With the pennies.
Pennies for Beethoven. Interesting. Well, stay on the phone. We're going to get you a free copy of Train Tracks. I got to ask my publisher to send me a few hundred copies, by the way. So let me read you this, the introduction to Train Tracks, because I'm sick of this. I can't take it. My blood is boiling. Not good for my high blood pressure. I don't understand this. Like madness. Like a madness has pervaded every aspect of my society. I grew up in a rational age. I feel like I grew up in the age of enlightenment, where everything was rational and reason, logic. Logic, one thing led to another. You figured things out. We have people talking or babbling. Empty suits. An empty fake president. A Fugazi. And a Fugazi first lady. Who can we sue over fat children? What law can we pass, she asks. So I'll read from my own life. I really was poor. Introduction to Train Tracks. Buy it now on Amazon. I really was poor. Should I read this thing? Yeah, it's a little. It's short. At my recent birthday party, my son got up to give this little speech about his dad, and he said something intriguing. Here's what he said. Here's what my son said. He said at my party, when my dad told me that he was so poor when he was young that he actually wore a dead man's pants, I thought he was just exaggerating, as I often think he does. But tonight before the party, he showed me childhood pictures that were just sent to him from relatives for this book. I was astounded to see he actually was wearing pants, hand-me-downs, five times too large, cut off at the knee. I couldn't believe his family was actually that poor. Well, that's the end of that quote. In reviewing the photographs in this book, Train Tracks, you will see that exact picture. Me standing beneath my aunt, straddled by my sister and my cousin, wearing dead man's pants. Every word that you read in this book, Train Tracks, is as true as that photograph. That's it. That's all I'm going to read right now. So, Obama, by the way, never wore dead man's pants. He had a very, very charmed childhood. Went to private schools, the best of everything. And yet they talk about slavery, the Underground Railroad. Let's see. What else did they suffer, him and Michelle? I don't boast about being poor. I didn't like being poor. I wished my father was rich. I didn't blame him for not being rich. He was a poor merchant, an immigrant. Did the best he could. He told me the rest was up to me. Man, child, in the promised land. That's all. So it was very clear to me. He wasn't going to give me a handout. No inheritance. Zero. Nothing. I had a roof over my head, three square meals, and went to City College. It was good enough for me. I got somewhere in life. No one gave it to me. The government stood in my way every step of the way. They stole my birthright. They tried to steal my birthright. They tried to turn me into a fourth-class citizen, but I wouldn't let them. I wouldn't let this illegitimate government do that to me with their affirmative action, putting morons ahead of me everywhere I turned. Morons, wherever you turn. Idiots and morons. Pick up a phone and see who answers the phone at a government office. If they speak English, they could be arrested for racism. There are other stories. I don't want to read them to you right now. I'm not in the mood. I'll tell the joke again. I heard half the people didn't get it. France to ban mother and father from official documents now that the third world socialist goon took over France and he put some third worlder into some high position. They're banning mother and father from official documents in France, a Catholic nation. It's incomprehensible what's happening to the West. It's as though, hey, hey, ho, ho, Western civilization has got to go. You can't even chant that anymore because it's gone. There is no Western civilization. It's gone. All you got to do is look at who we have running this country, and you realize there is no Western civilization. It's gone. Now, what is going to replace Western civilization? Let's see. Islamist civilization? That would be a real advancement, wouldn't it? Let's see. The women can burn their clothing and put on a burqa. This is amazing how they don't even know it. The liberals don't even know what's happening to them in this world. They have no idea. Something was on the bottom of my website I wanted to mention. Where is it? Where is this? Obama takes time. Forget Obama. I'm sick of him already. I'm sick of listening. I don't even like the word. I can't say. I hear the word, I get a migraine. If you say Obama to me, I get a single migraine. I see him on a television show saying he's eye candy. I get a double migraine. There's no medicine that I can take anymore to stop the nausea from this man's childishness. This is beyond belief. I don't know what to say. I'm outraged by it. It gets worse by the day. What else did you want to talk about? I don't know. There's so much to talk about. It was something I saw on my own website that you haven't seen anywhere. I can't find it, though. What else do you want me to do today? I have a thing with dentists. I mean, you need them. I had an implant last year. It's a hot. You know, I once thought of being a dentist in the beginning, way back in college. And I'll never forget. You know how a kid grows up. See, in those days, we had men to talk to. So I once said I wanted it. My father was sick. A doctor came in the house. He had a heart attack. So I talked to a doctor because he was like a god. A doctor comes in the house when you're, you know, lower middle class. Those days, a doctor. Today, they, you know, not what they were. I said, you know, I'm thinking of becoming a... They were nice. They would talk to you. Today, they look at a chart. They don't even look at you. You go into a doctor's office. They look at a chart and touch you with a cold instrument. They don't even ask you by name. They look at the chart and then... But he would talk to me. He says, well, Michael, you know, your father will be getting better. It'll take a while, this and that. What are you thinking of becoming? He was a nice man, a young doctor. I said, well, I'm thinking of becoming a psychiatrist. He said to me, don't. He said, you want to listen to people's troubles your whole life? Then another time a doctor was in the house. I said, I'm thinking of becoming a dentist. He said to me, what do you want to do, smell bad breath your whole life? I'll be right back.
Savage.
Going to blow. It's a powder keg, and everywhere you turn, the dynamite is sizzling. It's shocking, and it's all because we don't have any strength in our president. The whole world is blowing up around this child president, and he goes there, and instead of talking about, hey, look, we're in charge with the most powerful nation on earth. We have friends, and we have people who want to be our friends, and you better be one of them who want to be our friends. But no, he goes there, and he begs again. He begs this gang called the UN, begs them to forgive him again and says, we're sorry for the violence against Muslims. They killed our ambassador and three other men. And he's begging them to forgive us for what they did. Not one word about the violence of Islamists. It's sickening. It's sickening. Teddy Roosevelt walks softly and carry a big stick. Obama is talk loudly and carry a big pita. Talk loudly and carry a big pita. All right, what can you do? I had enough of this. My hands are sweating. My feet are sweating. My dog is already jumping off the sofa. He can't take any more of it, so you don't like it anymore. So I can't take politics right now because we have no leadership. We have a vacuum. Vacuum, child president. Okay. preamble to train tracks. I'm already moving into the post-election phase. I really was poor was the introduction. Book moved from number 52,000 to number 43 in humor overnight. It's listed as a humor book. I like that. Michael Savage has become a humorist. America's favorite humorist. It's Jack Benny. Preamble. And going through photographs for this book, I found pictures of many of the men that I write about. The gambler, the leather man, the uncle who was a Democratic Party operative. What strikes me is that they were all very ordinary looking men. You would never pick them out of a crowd and think that they were anything special. And that's just the point of this book, Train Tracks, which is that in the ordinary, there is the extraordinary. Now, whether it is that men were more dynamic in those days or that I saw the dynamism in their lives is for anyone to guess. I don't know. Are men still like that? There's a movie called The Naked City where it is said that, quote, there are 8 million stories in The Naked City. This has been one of them. I was fascinated by that movie as a young boy because it showed me that every individual person walking the streets had a story, if only you could find that story. And all of my life, I found that to be true. That, of course, every human in their destiny, in their journey through life, is actually weaving a story. It's just that most of us don't even realize that we are unique or weaving a story. Or is it that the times have made us, so many of us, homogeneous? Have the times homogenized us? Have we become just one massive group of individuals in a sort of socialist hive? Well, whatever the case may be, Train Tracks contains the stories of ordinary men and women, each of whom was extraordinary. That's pretty good. I haven't read it since I wrote it. I saw it once in like an earlier phase. That's nice writing. Who wrote it? Me. Large print version, Train Tracks, American Stories for the Holidays. I would say to you it's my last book, but it isn't. I thought it would last and would be my last book. But I guess there's no last show and there's no last book. You know what I'm saying? God decides when the curtain goes down, not man. You know who controls that, don't you? The big man upstairs. He is the ultimate arbiter of when the curtain goes down. Or shall we say the last curtain. And here we are. Here we are. What a day this has been. What a day this has been. I can't believe it. I keep saying for years, Hitler's back, this and that. Nothing. Nothing, not a word. It's left to the people in the streets to deal with this. A woman in New York City paid for some signs saying choose civilization over savages. And they had to run the signs. Pamela Geller, God bless her. And here an Egyptian woman comes up today in a New York subway car with a spray can and says, I'm exercising my free speech rights. I'm going to spray your sign out because I'm an Egyptian. In New York now, a radical Muslim with a spray can. And this woman, this Jewish woman, stands up to this Egyptian thug and says, I'm not going to let you spray the sign. No men, no rabbis, no Bloomberg. He's busy banning soda. Nothing. This poor Jewish woman had to protect her right of free speech. And thank God the MTA arrested that Egyptian thug. They should throw the book at her. They should make her clean the graffiti off subway cars for the next 90 days and teach her that this is not Egypt. But they won't do it. No, they won't do it. Bloomberg's busy banning hamburgers, hot dogs, French fries, salt, pepper, you name it. Not banning genocide. As I say, he should be more concerned about how much genocide the people can swallow rather than how much fat they can swallow. But he's a politician. They don't get involved anymore in anything. Here in California, Dianne Feinstein, the longest-running fraud in the history of the U.S. Senate. Check out what her net worth is now compared to what it was before she became a senator. Check out the contract she steered to her husband, Dick Blum. Check it out. Any other time, jail, 100 years, breaking bricks. I can't believe what I'm looking at. Steering contracts to Dick Blum's contracting firm in Iraq, going back to Iraq now. To Iraq. And the other prize we have here, Nancy Pelosi, and her fortune, how it's increased while she's in office. So you say, what are you so shocked at? What do you think they run for office for? For the betterment of mankind? No, I'm not shocked. I don't expect them to lose money in office. But this kind of naked nepotism, steering contracts, it's shocking. I don't know how they get it. Well, I don't know how. I do know how they get away with it. California, it's a one-party system. Democrat, Democrat, Democrat. Dianne Feinstein is so drunk on her own importance and power. Today she said, I'm not going to debate my opponent in the Senate race because I don't have to and I don't want to. That's the Democrat. That's what happens when you have one party rule. And I blame liberals for that. They got the fascism they've always dreamed of. Wherever liberals rule, you have a form of not socialism, but soft fascism, where it's all power all the time. No dissent is permitted, not even conversation. And if we continue down this road, we will be living in the third world very shortly. I don't know how the police do their jobs. I see I'm jumping to that. How do they do their jobs? Oakland, California, filled with gangs, violent murderers. And there's a gang task force of eight men who have to take on all the gangs in Oakland, California. Eight men have to take on guys with machine guns. The California Highway Patrol. Every day they go out on a traffic stop, they could lose their life like the young man whose funeral I went to 2 weeks ago. And incidentally, if you haven't sent any money to that fund, do so. The widow with four children could use it. Very shortly, I'm going to make a major donation to the California Highway Patrol Widows and Orphans Fund. I'm also going to announce a major donation to the Animal Welfare Fund that saves the elephants. I know it's a lost cause. But, you know, you got to go on with your life. You know, the world is pretty terrible right now. It is a powder keg. It's depressing. It's degenerate. It's sick. From skanks to sellouts, wherever you turn. Madonna, we have a black Muslim president for gay rights and the druggies scream yay. You hear? And that's all she looks like to me. Who would go see her? What does anyone see in these people? Drug addicts. Drug addicts is dancing around the maypole. George Orwell said it best. He said, every time I hear people screaming, freedom, 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 I'm free, I'm free, I'm free, I hear the chains rattling. That's what I see at a Madonna concert, a Gaga concert. Chains rattling, chains rattling, slaves, chains. Burning Man, you hear? Go let your child go to Burning Man. All of it, slaves, enslavement, drug addicts, a nation of drug addicts. Give me liberalism so I can be a slave. That's what it became. Give me liberalism so I can hang myself. Give me liberalism so I become an addict and go into recovery and whine about it on television every night.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
If you have a question that's plaguing you, I'll be your lifestyle coach for 5 minutes. Since I have reached a certain age and have a certain degree of knowledge and wisdom that you could use. I mean, look, when you give money to an expert to advise you on something, you go to the expert because you figure they know more than you do about the subject. That could be a tax accountant. It could be a psychiatrist. It could be a lifestyle coach. It could have been a teacher. Some authority figure who you feel knows something about certain things. And if you're lucky enough to get on the show through my call screener by calling 1-800-449-8255 with any lifestyle question, you'll be saving thousands of dollars because you'll get a free answer for whatever it's worth. Truthfully, I mean, that's what I'd rather do. So I'll start with anything but the election right now. I can't take it. I can't take any more of it. I'd rather talk about igneous rocks than Barack Hussein Obama. I would rather talk about the crustacean, the Democrats versus Republicans. I would rather talk about evolution rather than Democrats versus Republicans. I would rather talk about serpentine rock. I'd rather talk about the molecular structure of magnesium. Anything, please, spare me. Don't do this to me anymore. I can't take another second of it. Play the Life Coach theme so they know what we're talking about in the Savage Nation. Yeah, oh, that's nice. Desafinado. Desafinado. That's Stan Getz, right? Yes, Stan Getz, Desafinado. 1958 Chrysler was what I had at the time. My father's used car with it. She had a big block Hemi engine in it, I remember. I remember I got T-boned in a crosswalk after an afternoon with a Playboy bunny. No, in those days you could drive after a nice afternoon of pleasure. Today you go away for 7 years. I wasn't speeding. He hit me, and the guy went through a red light. He T-boned the car, and like a Hell's Angel hitter came over. He bought the car for the engine, I remember. I think he paid me $300 just for the engine. They hauled the Hulk away. It was a big car, beautiful engine. Incredible. See, every song has a certain memory attached to it. What are they calling? Okay, Las Vegas, Mike, welcome to the Savage Nation. Mike, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Doc. I want to know if you're ready for art lesson number two here for you.
Go ahead. I'm listening.
All right. Before we talked about doing some tracing with graph paper.
Yeah.
Now you got to keep the picture, the photograph that you took. You got to keep it on. All right,
you know what? No, Mike, truthfully, nobody wants to. That's not art tracing a picture, is it?
I'll tell you why. You're taking the photograph, and Norman Rockwell, he did the same thing, but he did it with a projection screen.
He projected an image on a screen and painted over it?
No. He just drew the outline. You're not painting it. You're just going to draw the outline. Very light lines. You're not doing the whole picture.
I'm not painting anymore. I put my paints away since I came back from Florida. It's very interesting. The light here doesn't do the same thing to me that the light in Florida did. The light in Florida was so intense that I started to paint. Now that I've come back to California, although it's beautiful, the intensity is not the same. So my paints are in the top of a closet. I'm not interested in painting again. Isn't that weird how light is so different in different parts of the world? But I like his idea of tracing. That's cheating, as far as I could tell. But, you know, look, John Nagy launched the art careers of many, many people. Which reminds me of the campaign we're watching. It's like a campaign created by John Nagy, where it's the numbers. You just follow the numbers and something comes out of it, you know? What is this? Is that a call? No one's calling? Does anyone have a question? Not a question in the whole bunch. No, please, I cannot have any. If I see the word Romney, whatever else the name is, I'm not taking the call. Blank them out. I'd rather go to a blank screen like an artist and trace on my own, on my call board. I can't take it. I swear to you, Mike, I'm regurgitating mentally from this. Yeah, here's a lifestyle question. Mike in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I wanted to ask, my 19-year-old son is a liberal arts major, and he's a really good kid. He's straight. He's into playing guitar and video games. And other than that, he knows not what he wants to do. And I'd really like to help him refine his search in terms of a career goal.
How old is he?
19, just turned.
No. Most kids at 19 don't know what they want to do, so don't feel alarmed by that. Did you know what you wanted to do at 19? I didn't.
No, I certainly didn't.
No, I didn't. I was always groping and searching. Nobody really knows what they want to do. Very few do, let's put it that way. Those who are driven like that usually want to become some bottom-feeding lawyer who deceives and lies to people. They have an idea from the time they're 9 years old that they're more devious and a better liar than their fellow kids in school, and they become lawyers. But other than that, how many people at 19 know what they really want to become?
Well, liberal arts, I feel like he's wasting his time doing a...
Well, they don't have an alternative called conservative arts yet, do they?
No, that would definitely make
it... No, liberal arts consists of how to put a condom on a cucumber, how to roll a doobie, and how to hate America. Those would be the three liberal arts that they learn in college. How to hate your parents, how to hate the church, and how to hate anybody who has anything more than you. That's the liberal arts curriculum today, especially at NYU. But, I mean, your question is a serious one, which is how do you motivate your son to try to, pick his way through this morass called life, right?
Absolutely.
All right, so I'll give you an answer. We'll start with the basics. How does any boy or girl figure out what they want to do to make a living? How do they figure that out? What do they do to figure that out? Well, the first they have to find out. First, they have to find out what jobs, if they're just looking for a job, assuming he's not wanting to be a professional, so to speak, of any kind. He doesn't want to go to a law school, medical school, dental school. He doesn't want to be an architect or an engineer. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right. So you've eliminated most of the white-collar professions. Therefore, what does he want to do? He has to make a living primarily, correct?
Yes.
All right. So how hard is it for him to go take a job in retail in New York? There are probably thousands of jobs going begging. And you say, well, who wants to work in a lowly paid retail job? The answer is nobody, really. But he gets exposure to humanity that way. And in this exposure, he might get inspired through somebody he meets or something he sees. The trick is to get him out of the house. He's got to work somewhere, Mike. Yes. Your name is Mike. Mike, he's got to take a job is what he's got to. Is he working now?
He's giving guitar lessons to young kids, and he also is helping my sister in a communications business, but he does a lot of running wires, you know, Category 5 wires and things of that nature.
What do you mean? You mean electronic wires and Cat 5 wiring?
Yes. But, you know,
okay, so he's into electronics?
Yeah, I'm only insofar as my brother-in-law has been training him. My brother-in-law has a business doing that. And I tried.
So he is working. So he is. He's not a total slacker. He's not sitting home like Wayne's World in the basement, is he?
No, but he's part time. He doesn't like it. You know,
he doesn't like it. But that's how life works. Is you take a menial job and you don't like it, and you say I don't want to do this anymore. I can't stand it. And you figure out a way that you're going to make more money by doing something else. You train for it, or you get next to somebody who has a better job and you take the job. I mean. There's no magic answer here. How did you get? What do you do for a living?
I'm in financial services, actually, and I did exactly what you said. I hit my head along a few pipes and tried jobs, and I didn't like them, and eventually became into financial services where I helped families.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So there was no magic. Your father didn't come along and give you a silver wand like Mitt Romney's father, and give you a, you know, you didn't have a fortune. You had to fend for yourself.
Yeah, I just feel like I failed him, or I am failing him, I should say, that I am not.
But that's the thing is, you feel as a father that he should have been doing better than you already. And you feel that in America, the land of opportunity, the son is supposed to succeed the father financially and socially. That's basically what you feel. And you don't understand why your son has fallen behind you, I think, is another subtext to this conversation.
Yes. Yes.
All right, indeed. But Mike, he's young yet. He's not 39, is he?
No.
If he was 39 and still living at home with you and your wife and had a hairnet on and was smoking a joint, I would say you have trouble. But he's a kid. He's only 19 years old. You know, give him time. He'll figure things out. He'll either go with his likes and make a living, or he'll go with his likes and find out that he can't make a dollar doing it. And then he'll say, I can't do this anymore. And he'll become something where there's a job. He'll go back to school for 2 years and become whatever is necessary. He could go, you know, you have no idea what he's liable to do. Just be there for him and love him and tell him it'll work out if he keeps working. That's all you can do for him, Mike. You can't force it, and you can't get angry, and most of all, don't feel badly because he's a young kid yet. He's very young.
His professor, he just signed up for the winter module in his community college, and the professor wanted him. He said, Dad, I don't like this professor. Yeah, I think you'll get a kick out of this. She made it mandatory that they subscribe to the New York Times. When he said he wanted to drop out of our class, I said, any professor, I want you to subscribe to that rag. I want you to drop out of our class. By all means, you want to withdraw, withdraw. And I gave him my full approval on withdrawing out of the class. But I thought it was interesting that a sociologist.
Well, I don't know that she could force him to subscribe to the New York Times, but the fact of the matter is, I wouldn't say, I was afraid you were going to say that she forced him to subscribe to The Nation or some other overtly communist, you know, rag. All right, you know, stay with your kid. Just remember, Mike, you're feeling bad for yourself that you don't see a more motivated son, but you're not alone in that. How many of your son's, your friend's children are motivated today?
I have a few. I guess that's why I'm a little dejected.
What do you mean? Guys who are like the young guys are already driven into jobs, careers, professions?
Oh, I have one friend's son who's 21 years old, and the kid, he already works for the New York City Comptroller's Office. He's interviewing at some of the biggest firms, and the kid is just, and it's all not because of daddy's affiliations. The kid is just an absolute go-getter, knows that he wants the financial.
All right, so but not everyone's the same way. Your son is on the more autistic side, right?
Yes, indeed.
All right, so he's withdrawn. He's probably, you know, introspective. He doesn't like to run around and compete with people that much. He's a different type of personality.
Absolutely, and that's what worries me.
Yes, but Mike, not everybody can be a driven personality who always wants to get ahead and is willing to do anything to get there. It doesn't mean you don't love them, right?
No, of course.
All right. Well, Mike, just look, we'll probably never talk to each other again. This is actually a very heartwarming and also a heart. It's a troubling conversation in a way, Mike, because you're not the only father in America who is worried about a child. You're one of tens of millions of parents who wonder why their child is not motivated or has fallen behind them in terms of the great American success chase. I don't have a single answer for you other than to say continue to love your child and encourage them to work, because in the midst of even the most menial job, they are likely to meet people who will guide them in ways you could never imagine. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So I picked up a newspaper, and the newspaper has a bulletin board in it while you're calling me on such an important question, because I see the average person could care less about politics. They're stuffing their faces. They're guzzling the wine, beer, this, that. They don't care. They don't care who's in the White House. They could care less. They think it's all corrupt and all criminal. And as long as they can still buy a hamburger and stuff their mouths with a hamburger and a beer and put the hat on backwards and watch a moron throw a ball around, they don't care who's in the White House. And you know that, and I know that. So I pick up the bulletin board from the local Florida newspaper. And here's on the local bulletin board. I say, is this what average people do on a Thursday night? Okay, here we go. Bingo, St. John's Catholic Church. Boca Raton Stamp and Coin Club. Food Addicts in Recovery Anonymous, Boynton Beach. Gamblers Anonymous and Gam Anon meetings, Olympic Heights High School, west of Boca Raton. Lecture. Well, I can't even read. Oh, health and education issues in Haiti and the local Haitian community. Lecture, school bully, how to stop it. Lecture, senior scams and how to avoid them. Recovery International, self-help for depression, anxiety, anger, panic, and compulsions. I should go to that one. You know, you do this for a living, and you watch men who should know better submitting to fallen jocks like the guy on CNN and not slamming him to the ground. I could have stopped John King with one. I don't care what he would have asked me. I would have just said, now listen to me. You're nothing but a paid hack for CNN. Here's what we're going to talk about right now. We're going to talk about how Obama has destroyed the entire world. He set the world afire in the Middle East. He has made Israel almost a non-existent nation. He has wrecked the economy. Now, who would stop anybody who would say that? CNN wouldn't stop the tape. The people would cheer. The country would say, at last, the leader has arisen. Instead, you got one putz after another answering to a fallen jock who probably had a D average in college. But that's what I say. So you look at the bulletin board. Lecture, senior scams and how to avoid them. Recovery International, self-help for depression, anxiety, anger, panic, and compulsions. This one actually caught my eye, the next one. Socrates Cafe Discussion Group. At a certain library, Socrates Cafe Discussion Group. That's not bad. And a theater show, there's a theater show at a high school called Candida. For a minute, I thought it said cyanide. I'm so depressed from the Republicans that I changed Candida into cyanide. I looked at the paper. I said, wait a minute, there's a theater piece called Cyanide. Maybe I ought to go to that one. No, it's Candide. It's unbelievable to me what's going on in this country. 1-800-449-8255. I'll be right back.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
I want you to listen to this interview that I did on my new book, Trickle Down Tyranny, now a bestseller.
Michael, always great to talk to you.
Right, and people don't realize that this will likely be my last nonfiction book because everything is at stake, Monica. When I say Trickle Down Tyranny, when I say he's the $5 trillion man, when I say Obama's an anti-American man, when I say these things, I do so very carefully and at great risk to myself. This is not hype. I believe that Obama, when he says he wants to transform this country, that he's a transformational president, is telling us exactly what he is and what he wants to do. The question is, Monica, will the most polarizing president in our history transform America into Caracas, Beijing, Moscow, Tehran? What does he have in mind? You mean it wasn't good enough for him? He needs to create something better? You know, when I was a boy, and a poor boy at that, I was told in America anyone can become president. Well, with Obama, we know that's true. Anyone has become president. But you'd think he'd be thankful that he became president. You'd think he would love the country that made it a minority of unknown origins president. But that's not good enough. He wants to transform America. And transform he does. He transforms it in a way you could never imagine. We have the smallest Navy since World War I. Our GDP is $15 trillion, but our debt is quite a bit high, isn't it? The fact of the matter is the man is a classic tax and spend liberal. That would be bad enough if it was only that I'm worried about. But, Monica, can I just ask four questions of your listeners, many of whom are probably moderates and don't really believe a word I'm saying?
Please.
Okay, here are questions for the moderates who listen to Monica Crowley and don't want to hear a negative word about President Barack Obama. Tell me if you answer yes or no to these four questions. In America today, is poverty rewarded? Check yes or no. In America today, is success punished? Check yes or no. In America today, are our worst enemies praised while our allies are stiffed? Check yes or no. In America today, is the military used as a publicity stunt, as a pawn? Check yes or no. In America today, have our borders descended into chaos? Check yes or no. And finally, in America today under Obama, have corporations and cronies of the power structure made off with all the wealth? If you've checked yes to more than four of those statements, welcome to the newly created Union of Socialist States of America. And as I point out in Trickle Down Tyranny, this is only the beginning.
I've checked yes to all of them, Michael. Not four, but all six. And, you know, the word in your title, Trickle Down Tyranny, and again, we're talking to the great Michael Savage, tyranny is what catches the eye, because you look at that and you think, and I think most Americans, I think the American mind has a hard time processing the idea of tyranny. So
yes.
That even though we do already have a de facto dictatorship, and God forbid he gets reelected, because then it won't be de facto, it will be an actual dictatorship. But I think the American mind has a hard time, Michael, processing the idea that this could actually happen here. And yet it is happening here. And it reminds me so much when you look at the footage in the 1930s of Germany, and the German people are just kind of walking around, including German Jews, walking around thinking, oh, well, you know, this is kind of bad, but how could it get worse? And, we're in a similar situation here where we're not paying close enough attention, I don't think, to what's happening all around us. And when the crud hits the fan, it's going to hit really, really fast. And before you know it, this country is over.
Monica, let's look at the root of the word tyrant, if people think I'm overhyping the word tyranny. It comes from the Latin, I believe, or the Greek, which means a lord, sovereign, master. Can anyone listening to this show honestly say that Obama's imperiousness, his abuse of power, his abuse of the taxpayer, the way he railroads people with policies, the way he threatened the Supreme Court, the way he passed the the National Defense Authorization Act while you celebrated on New Year's Eve. He stole your civil rights with one act. The man has passed more executive orders than any president in history in the amount of time he's been in power. When he came to power, he said he would not abuse it. He's abused it. The tyrant, the word tyrant comes from the Greek meaning a lord, sovereign master. I think it applies to President Obama. But my fears are that he hasn't even gotten started yet. And he's biding his time in the sense that he's more or less a lame duck president right now until the election. If, God forbid, people are tricked by him again in the Democrat socialist machine and he has absolute power for four more years, what is to stop this young, virile man from declaring term limits over? Tell me why he couldn't do that with an executive order.
You're exactly right. And, Michael, you're pointing out the executive orders. Think about this. He's end-run Congress so many times through executive orders, bureaucratic fiat, through the agencies like the EPA. And then how many times has he slammed into the judiciary, including the Supreme Court, to their face, and now most recently over Obamacare? This is a man who has no respect for the constitutional separation of powers and the whole concept of co-equal branches of government. So I'm right there with you that if he wins re-election, God forbid, then you can might as well take the Constitution and put it through a shredder.
Well, isn't that the Chicago way? The fact of the matter is, do they respect the Constitution? How many people even know what it is? They look at five or six illiterate fools from New Jersey, and they think that that's America. Take a look at the popular culture, Monica. It's pretty clear that the trashiest levels have dominated for a long time, only they've gotten trashier. Do we blame Obama for this? Of course not. But I have to say that this trash also votes. These illiterate, uneducated morons have the power of the vote. They haven't any idea that this is a wolf in sheep's clothing. You understand exactly what I'm saying. Obama presents himself as a sheep, a nice man. But underneath it, we know there's a hardened Leninist run by the most powerful, intelligent machine in the history of America and not to the best interests of America. All you've got to do is look at the debt. $5 trillion of debt. So Bush ran it up to $1 trillion in debt. That was horrible. I criticized Bush for 2 years straight, the last 2 years of his administration. I called him a fiscal socialist. I did that on the radio. Everybody knows that. I'm not a Republican. I'm an independent. I have been for years. But now Obama takes a $1 trillion debt and turns it into a $5 trillion debt. Does anybody on earth think that's a sane way to run an economy? Of course not. Military. Crushes the military, destroys the U.S. military at every turn, downsizes the military, puts the military down, uses the military as a pawn. You go into every issue. It's quite a nightmare. And so, look, trickle-down tyranny, it's already number two or three on the best-sell list and only a week or two out. There's a lot of people who've heard about it. But, Monica, I'm banned from virtually all television, not banned virtually, all television media has said Michael Savage is on the forbidden list. I have a blacklist against me. They keep talking about McCarthy's era in the 1950s. Now that the liberals run the media, they have a powerful blacklist, even more powerful than McCarthy had in the 1950s. And yet, the people who know what's going on have rushed out to buy the book Trickle Down Tyranny. They need some document. They need something in their hands that they can show friends and neighbors to try and save the country before the next election. And Monica, to me, it's my last nonfiction book. There's no point in writing anymore. If he gets reelected, I will wager a bet that there'll never be another anti-Obama book published by a mainstream publisher. I'll wager another bet that talk radio ends as you know it within the next 2 years. I'll wager another bet that the internet is regulated within the first year of his next regime. All of the freedoms we enjoy today under the First Amendment will be curtailed or destroyed if this tyrant is reelected.
We're, of course, talking to Michael Savage, radio superstar. You can hear him all across the country or go to his website, michaelsavage.com, to find a station near you. And his new book is called Tickle Down Tyranny.
Monica, you said tickle down tyranny. I wish it tickled.
I was hoping you didn't catch that, Michael Savage, but you did. Yes, it's trickle down. I wish it tickled. You're right.
Let's have the tyrant.
Because at least that would be enjoyable.
Wouldn't that be fun if we could have a tyrant tickle us?
Yeah, not so much, but would be better than what we've got now. On that word, tyranny, Michael, let me ask you, have you seen the movie The Hunger Games? or read the book?
You know, I haven't. I'm a big movie nut, but I haven't seen it.
All right. You have to go see it because, and then we'll talk again when you've seen it, because it creates sort of this dystopian post-apocalyptic world in North America, which is run by a totalitarian government. And when you watch this movie, you think, you know, am I crazy to think that here we are in the United States in 2012, and we are only two steps away from having that kind of reality? And you leave the movie theater and you go, we are only two steps away from that. And am I crazy, or is this government gone crazy? And that's why I think your book is so important, because it lays out the reality that, in fact, we are only a step or two away from having that kind of nightmare inflicted on us.
The words absolute power come to mind and abusive power come to mind. The whole purpose, as you well know, as an attorney, of the Constitution was to create a separation of powers. Obama doesn't seem to understand he's not a monarch, that just because he thinks he's so wonderful doesn't give him the power to throw away the Constitution and say, I am supreme leader, and the Supreme Court be damned, Congress be damned. He acts as though he doesn't need them. Everybody sees this in him. And the radical psychotic left cheers this on, because we know the left is fascistic. The left is the actual right that we've been fearing. Everything we've been told to fear from the right is coming from the left, Monica. It's a world turned upside down. Look at who we invited to the White House. You don't have to look any further than at the National Day of Prayer or the National Prayer Breakfast, our commander-in-chief had the audacity to invite the street thug Al Sharpton to the White House. Nobody even knows where the so-called reverend was ordained. But this is a dangerous man who called for various and sundry violences against people. He has no place in the White House. And yet Eric Holder said, I need you at the national meeting of the Al Sharptonites. We have an administration that seems to be using thugs on their side who oppose the American way. And so therefore we have a very dangerous situation. And unless we stop Obama and his clear dream of the socialist states of America, we will have not a trickle-down tyranny, but an overt tyranny. One last note, Monica, and I know that people get nervous when I talk like this. I can almost feel it. They don't want to hear it. They'd rather go about their daily business, and I don't blame them. When I say crushing Obama's dream of the socialist states of America, let me analyze this from one point of view. Several states have tried to enforce voter ID laws in their own states using states' rights. They don't want illegal aliens voting. They don't want people double and triple voting from out of state or from out of the district. Doesn't it make sense to have voter ID? Of course it does. You need a license to drive. You need a license to go to various sporting events. Young people need licenses to get ID to get into a nightclub. And what has happened when these states have tried to pass voter ID laws? The federal government under Obama's attorney general has fought the state saying you have no right to enforce voter ID laws. Is that not tyranny? Isn't that a socialism to say that we are the supreme ruler and there are no longer any states' rights? It's the same with other aspects, immigration laws. States say we've had enough of illegal aliens killing our hospitals, destroying our schools, running rampant in the streets with crime. Everyone knows this is going on. And yet, when the states try to impose immigration laws that make sense, common sense laws that most Americans want, what does the Obama administration do? They sue the states. That's why I say, pay careful attention to what Michael Savage says when I say trickle-down tyranny, crushing Obama's dream of the socialist states of America. These words were carefully chosen, and they weren't chosen just to shock you.
You know, Michael, when you take a look at the left, and I think what we have now, and I think you and I agree on this, is not just the left in America, but the left on steroids, that what they are trying to do, this whole concept of cradle-to-grave security, quote-unquote security, that comes straight out of communism and socialism. And we are going full-on in that direction, while every communist and socialist system has either collapsed, imploded, or is moving to capitalism, as we see in China and in Cuba. But Obama and the Democrats, the modern-day Democrats, are driving the bus of America off the cliff toward those failed systems. And you have no other way of explaining it except to say that this is 100% deliberate. This is not, you know, they're not naive, they're not incompetent, they don't know what they're doing. It's none of those things. This is an absolute deliberate agenda by this group of leftists controlling the government.
I agree 100%. The question is, how far will they be able to take us with such moderate, meek opposition from the Republican Party who doesn't seem to understand that this is fast becoming Alinsky's America, with labor unions and crony capitalists and race and agenda-based groups of thugs of every sort vying for a piece of the action. In the book, I write a section called Rules for Beating Radicals, including never believe a word that comes out of a Democrat's mouth because lying is their standard mode of operation. Never negotiate with a leftist Democrat. There's no such thing as good faith where leftist liberals are concerned. Never compromise. Attack Democrats before they attack you. Obstruct Democrats at every opportunity. But most importantly, understand that the Democrat today is not the Democrat of JFK. Today, right. JFK, were he alive, would be considered a right-winger. That's the astonishing truth. The Democrat Party of today is clearly the Socialist Party USA. It is clearly the socialist parties that you see in Europe, the Christian Democrats or whatever they call themselves in Europe, are the socialist wings of the left. That is what we have in America.
Michael, you are wonderful. Always great to talk to you.
You've tickled my fancy.
Savage.
Phone number is 1-800-449-8255. I will now talk about 1984 and Brave New World and Aldous Huxley and George Orwell. You see, you've got to go from the yin to the yang and the yang to the yin. Did you ever read Brave New World or 1984? How did these books affect you? They affected me very deeply. Do you think these books, Brave New World or 1984, apply to Obama's mind-controlling techniques and how? I was surfing the internet today before the show, and I found a fascinating letter from Aldous Huxley to George Orwell after Orwell published 1984. A few months in 1949, a few months after release of Orwell's dystopian masterpiece 1984, Orwell received a letter from fellow author Aldous Huxley, who 17 years previously had seen his own nightmarish vision of a future society published in the form of Brave New World. And if you'll read the letter, which I'm going to summarize for you, what you'll see is a realistic prediction of the world you're living in now under Barack Hussein Obama. He didn't start it by any means, but he certainly tries to continue the brainwashing, the hypnosis that is long in development here in the United States of America. For example, Obama gave a speech saying that he added 4 million jobs, which is a complete lie. It's an absolute and total lie. He didn't add 4 million jobs. How could he come up with a statement like that? The answer is because we don't have an independent media that's going to challenge him on that. And so therefore he can say anything he wants. He could say that the sky is green when it's blue. And the Democrats behind him, the stooges, will sit there and clap and cheer. He can produce cars that blow up when they drive off the assembly line. And he will say that they're better than gas-driven cars because he says so. And the Democrats who vote for him and Barbara Boxer will approve of that. So let me read for you now a letter from October 1949 from Aldous Huxley to George Orwell. Did you ever read Brave New World in 1984? How did these books affect you? Do you think Obama's mind-controlling techniques apply in any of this, and how do they apply? So then Huxley writes to Orwell and he says, "May I speak of the thing with which your book deals, the ultimate revolution?" And he says, "The revolution which lies beyond politics and economics and which aims at total subversion of the individual psychology and physiology." Did you hear what I just said? The ultimate revolution is the subversion of the individual psychology and physiology. And he says they are first to be found in the Marquis de Sade, who regarded himself as the continuator, the consummator of Robespierre and Babeuf. The philosophy of the ruling minority in 1984 is a sadism which has been carried to its logical conclusion by going beyond sex and denying it. Now, in fact, the reverse has come to be true. I'm now interjecting my own editorial. This government uses sex. This government media complex uses sex to control you. They have not gone beyond sex. They've not denied sex. In the ultimate revolution to control you, they use sex to control you. So those who are the most enslaved in our society, who scream, "I am free, I am free, I am free," because I am this and I am that and I have sex on a lamppost, are in fact the most enslaved.
Savage.
Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Stop it. You can't play that song on this show. Gloria Allred's liable to sue the rock and rollers who sang Little Girl of Mine. I mean, that is demeaning to a woman. I mean, to call a woman Little Girl of Mine in a song, that's unheard of. How dare you? I think she should find that she should disinter the owner of that record company. And if any of those men who sang that despicable song, Little Girl of Mine, are living in a nursing home, seek them out. Break them over your knee. We can't have Little Girl of Mine in this country. That is demeaning. You get some strange callers in this business, I got to tell you. I don't know what's coming next. I just don't know. You don't know who's going to call next, but you're invited to be that who at 1-800-449-8255. It's the one and only Savage Nation, surviving the turbulence of the times, riding the white water with all of you. Oh, this is really rough. This is white water. This is the white water of radio. These are the white water days of talk radio that I'm in. We're going down the canyon as fast as possible. And so far, the canoe is holding its own. I don't know who's going to call next or what's going to come up. The guy called me earlier and talked about slime in the meat. He said he doesn't care. He likes slime in the meat. It's unbelievable. I don't know who's going to call next. It could be a caller from the deepest reaches of Connecticut or Vermont. My cracky Doc Savage, you're a heck of a guy. Doc Savage, I have a question for you. You're such a brilliant guy. What kind of tooth powder should I be using now? See, back in 41, I was using that Colgate. It was made from a bitumate, a certain bisulfite product. But, well, during the war, they seized it all up for that gunpowder. Well, then after the war, after Elmer's remains came home, we shifted over to a chlorine-based tooth powder. And I got to tell you, I noticed a change in my rabbits right away. I saw them rabbits change their behavior. Doc Savage, I want to know if it was that chlorine-based tooth powder. Oh, God. You know, laughter is the best medicine for our linguistic and cultural divide here in America. Laughter is the best medicine for America's linguistic and cultural divide. I apologize if I did not speak in the aphorisms that you used to, but this is the best I can do given the situation that we're living in now. Oh, yeah. Who knows? Who's going to call next? I don't know. It's an interesting topic. Look what I found for you. See, now you're going to get a shocker. You're going to get a treat now. If you're a regular listener, let's say you're listening on and off and you never missed a show in 16 years, and I mean every hour and every minute and every day. Even when you were incarcerated for DUI, you somehow had an earphone array. I've been going through my archives because I told you I'm writing a book about my childhood stories and I'm looking for stories. And this, I was back in 1965, I was the assistant editor of a little literary magazine called Exit, Urbi et Orbi. Now, I found these magazines. They're worth a fortune because these are the original magazines. There were only four of them. I remember we got a big write-up in the New Yorker or the New York Times as one of the best little magazines of its time. And I was thrilled. I was working with some brilliant young guys in New York. They were really wonderful people. I don't even know where they went. Or who, you know, I never kept in touch with them. But I wrote an article in 1965 entitled, Who is at the Helm? And I'm going to read it to you in part now. You ready for this? Because if this doesn't apply to what's going on in the country today, I don't know what does. Who is at the Helm by Michael? Here it is. It's a short essay. You want me to read it? Yes or no? Raise your hands in the audience. It's 2 pages long. The next article is Malcolm X. His interview over New York station WBAI-FM with Harry Ring was broadcast January 28, 1965, less than a month before his death. See, you don't realize how diverse my background really is. You could easily typecast people, and you're going to lose an awful lot with your prejudging. That's called prejudice. See, the word prejudice means prejudge. So if you're prejudging me, you're losing an awful lot. So let me read who was at the helm from 1965, and here it goes. Recently, it was brought to my attention that Bertrand Russell and a large body of intellectuals delivered a signed article to the British press, which said that mankind must immediately undertake to find new sources for its food supply. The group insisted that, should we not immediately act upon this call, we shall find ourselves a species without nourishment. An immediate action was undertaken by the officials in charge. The article was suppressed and appeared in but two British newspapers. The situation related above is indicative of a major problem of mankind. We as a species have not yet insisted that our leaders be men of mind and vision, brains. Imagine then that we, you and I, are cells in a great creature, that is to say, one being, mankind, a being that has the basic problems of procuring food and shelter, in addition to the natural obstacles that are common to all living organisms. Then I would like to compare the activities of the mankind creature to those of a simple sea creature and see how each faces the basic problems of living. Perhaps then we, the quote, advanced creature, will be able to see why we have not yet established the sane order of survival for our species. And I went on to compare us to the hydra, a certain type of jellyfish. It's a tiny sea creature with a half-inch body that is excellent for studying because you can observe its activities on a cellular level. And I said, when faced with an enemy, the hydra calls upon cells that are specially equipped for its protection. These cells, the nematoblasts, enclose stinging capsules that have a barbed process of cytoplasm shaped much like a spear. Thus, the problem of defense is met without confusion as to which group of cells is to react. The nematoblasts, which are obviously evolved for the job of defense, are signaled by the creature's nerve network and they act. No helter-skeltering of indecision, just decisive action. You see where I'm going with this article? And it wasn't to discuss the merits of our military system that I did this. It was to show you that there was a certain order within a cell, a simple creature like the hydra, defense cells, etc., inside the simple organism. And then I was talking about we as mankind. And I concluded by saying, just as the hydra survives because its functions are well directed by a nerve network, so must the survival of mankind be directed by a network of minds. Those men who have mastered the powers of the intellect should be duty-bound to serve as brain tissue for the creature called mankind. You see what I'm getting at here? So what am I saying to you? Do you actually believe that conniving, devious, deceitful politicians should serve as our brain tissue? Do you think that the meanest, most devious minds of our generation are equipped to preserve us as a species on this planet? Do you think that men who might have evolved to be butchers, but instead are politicians, are the best to save this planet and save the people? What am I seeking? I'm seeking peace and harmony. What do you think I really want in the world? If you actually analyze what you do every day, what you really want is peace and harmony. You want to be left alone to lead your own life the way you best want to lead it, right? Do you want thought control? Do you want big sis monitoring you? Do you want surveillance cameras on every corner under the guise of anti-terrorism? Do you want degenerates to strip search you at an airport and tell you they're doing it for your safety? No, you don't want any of that. But we're impotent. We're impotent because our mental adolescence, the mental adolescence of our time, have taken over our life. And frankly, they're self-destructive. And it's all based upon their egotism and their power madness. And I said, I'm going to conclude now. You ready for the conclusion? I wrote this one a long time ago when I was a very, very young guy. Immediately and without delay, instead of adolescent war games, we would undertake those problems which are most basic to our needs as a species. If we continue to be directed without the benefit of our most advanced minds, continuing to follow unreasoning instinct, we will ultimately wipe ourselves from this planet, wrote Michael in the year 1965 in his essay called Who Was at the Helm. So if you listen to what I just said to you, I just dug this up out of the archives, it's hard to believe. I've really been very political for my entire writing career and my entire broadcasting career. In other words, long before I was political in a broadcast sphere, I was political in a written sphere and I didn't even know it. All of my health books, all of my books on nutrition, herbal medicine, homeopathy, etc., are very political because what I was trying to do was awaken the American people to a healthier way of living. Healthier foods, healthier diet, vitamins, minerals, nutrients, herbs. I was 30 years ahead of my time. And it's interesting to me that the, quote, liberals of today, the progressives of today, are the most anti-health food, anti-vitamin segment of our society. Isn't it odd that conservatives seem to love those who raise organic food? The conservatives love pure foods and pure drugs. The conservatives love the vitamin industry, and it's the arch progressives, and I'll name them Waxman, for example, Nostrilman from Southern California, who is the most anti-vitamin congressman in American history. He hates the vitamin industry, doesn't want you to have control over your own health and your own body, works like a street corner hustler for the pharmaceutical industry, in my opinion, trying to legislate vitamins out of your control so that you won't even be able to buy a vitamin tablet. You'll have to get it through a drugstore and through a pharmaceutical company. Isn't it interesting that it's the, quote, liberals or the progressives who are trying to crush your freedoms at every turn? When are you going to wake up to the fact that those at the helm are not the best leaders, that those at the helm are better butchers than they are brain cells? I'll be right back.
Savage.
Now, somebody once said living well is the best revenge. Now, what living well means is up to you. To me, it's a few people I can talk to and have a meal with, which is very rare in this world. So last night, I got to tell you, as I told you I would, a man in the street story. I go up to North Beach Restaurant. Lorenzo had been away for 10 days. And I brought Teddy in. Teddy likes to dine on Italian food. And I go up there and I said, look, I don't want any fish. I don't want any pasta. I want meat tonight. So he says, why don't you have scotodito? I said, what's scotodito? I don't speak Italian. He says, scotodito, it means you'll burn your finger. I said, what? I don't want to burn my finger. He said, no. Scotodito means lamb chops. That's how we used to say it in Italy. He said, scotodito. So I said, okay, then give me some hot lamb chops. So I ate these greatest lamb chops. Teddy scoffed down some veal at Lorenzo. Lorenzo just lost one of his dogs, and he was heartbroken, so he likes Teddy more than ever. And he gave him some veal. And we had a nice time. And I'm leading up to some wine here, some wine story. I bring in a bottle of my own because I had been drinking earlier the night before New Zealand wine. I happen to like wine. When I drink wine at all, I like New Zealand from Marlborough, the Sauvignon Blanc from Marlborough in New Zealand, right? And it's a little bit of an affront to Lorenzo because he has his own, vineyard. I understand that, but it's all right. He's a big guy. So he drank the wine. And he said to me, the first thing that you smell when you drink it, well, I don't know. Do you want to hear more about wine? Because his grandfather taught him in Italy how to taste wine when he was 6 years old. Here's what his grandfather said. He said, Lorenzo, you take a small sip of wine. You put it on your tongue. Don't move anything. Count to eight and let it go down from the side of your mouth into your throat. And then he said, as a young kid, he choked almost to death from it. He said, when he did it, though, I experienced it because the side of your mouth is the most delicate part of your throat. I experienced something incredible. Something incredible because it goes all the way into your throat and the side of your mouth. My grandfather used to say, you know when you do that, it takes the pants off the wine and you really see what is there. I love the florid language of old Italy. So I'm going to give you a little more of the florid language of old Italy. You ready for more? Here's some more. They had a lot of troubles in Italy after the war. So he says his grandfather told him when he was a little boy in Italy, when they had nothing but trouble because the Nazis had occupied Italy, by the way, his grandfather said to him, everyone has a cross to bear, but lucky is the one that can keep the cross in his pocket. That struck me as such a brilliant statement to remember. I love that one, so I made a note of it. And then we talked about olive oil and this and that. I'm not going to bore you with that, but here's the end of the story because it was very funny. I ate the meal. Teddy had his meal. We had a lot of fun talking. I drank some wine. I go outside. It turned very cold. It was like 50 degrees, 51 degrees. The wind was blowing, which I love. I had my overcoat and hat on. And just guys, BSing in the street waiting to get back in the car. Incidentally, someone drives me when I drink. You just should know that in case you want to send a letter to somebody. And then a man comes around the corner, an Iranian man. He's a Persian. He owns a Persian restaurant around the corner. I've seen the restaurant for 30 years. I've not gone in it. It's always been known as a upscale, Persian restaurant. But I never went in it. So he says to me, He says to me, did I tell you a story? He says, I know who you are. He says, you're a legend in this city. And he says to me, I said, thank you very much. I said, well, your restaurant is a legend. We exchange pleasantries. So he said to me, did I ever tell you? Now, remember, he's a Muslim. So he says to me, did I ever tell you the story that when the Jews don't eat, the Muslims starve to death? Well, we all broke into phenomenal laughter. I said, that's the funniest thing I ever heard. He was, of course, referring to the days of the Jewish holidays when Jewish people generally don't go to restaurants. So here is a Muslim guy who owns a Persian restaurant. He says, we have a saying in the restaurant business that when the Jews don't eat, the Muslims starve to death. I said, I got to say that on the radio tomorrow. He says, no. He says, you can't say it because you're not Muslim. He says, people will take offense. He said, let me say it. I can't imagine a Muslim would take offense at something that's funny. I mean, it's a good-natured joke, isn't it? Or did that offend somebody? Maybe you can call the ACLU because I told you a joke. San Luis Obispo, Robbie, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. I hear you talk about olive oil. I'm an old retired surgeon who makes olive oil in California, and I know you like Spanish oil, but there are some pretty spectacular California olive oils that are really, really extra virgin.
Oh, I almost drink it. I use a California or extra virgin olive oil because it's about the only certified organic oil that's reliably organic.
Yeah, we really police ourselves. The California Olive Oil Council, we have the highest standards in the world for the certification as extra virgin. And when
I really believe me, I'm an olive oil fanatic, and I do love. Yes, I like Spanish olive oil, but the fact of the matter is, there are trees here in California that are not quite 1,000 years old, but they're some phenomenally old trees. And the if they're new trees, they're made from cuttings from Spanish cuttings, weren't they? Some of them.
Some of them, yes.
And the reason I like Spanish olive oil in general is because it's a lower acid oil. Am I correct in that?
It is, but we make a very unique varietal from Italy that's also very, very low in acidity.
This is Dr. Dissident Michael Savage back in a moment.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
The Wall Street Journal is coming out with a piece called The Super Lobbyist. Do you know what that is? That's me. I'm the Super Lobbyist.
I'm legally allowed to accept money from special interests in order to influence Congress on their behalf.
You want $30 million in fees.
You want to kick some ass on the Hill? We can do it.
Show me the money!
That is a trailer from the TV movie. I think it was HBO, Casino Jack, which allegedly is based on the life of Jack Abramoff, played by Kevin Spacey. I told you the whole thing was set up to make Republicans look evil and Democrats look clean. But it was very entertaining and very well done because Kevin Spacey is a fabulous actor. And it was well done. It was understandable. If you know, you could read through what they were trying to say, you can watch it. So anyway, Jack Abramoff was a top lobbyist when Bush was president. And he committed some violations of the law for which he paid and went to prison. I've been thinking about Jack Abramoff over the last few days. He was on the show about a month ago, and I've been thinking about him for a number of reasons. What I'm going to ask him, and he's joining us right now on the Savage Nation. Well, let me ask him directly. Jack Abramoff, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thanks for having me.
Jack, you were there. You knew everybody. You knew Newt Gingrich. You knew President Bush. I mean, you were the top lobbyist around. You were making a fortune. I watch what's going on now under Obama. What they're doing, is it any different?
No, I think it's, in many cases, it's worse. I was on a show. They asked me about the Solyndra thing. And I said, to be honest with you, at my most cheeky moment, I wouldn't have even proposed something like that. They're far exceeding, I think, what went on in those days.
$500 million with Solyndra is only one of the corrupt stories coming out of the fake solar companies. We know that this is a churn. This is the way they churn money into the hands of supporters. Isn't it, Jack?
Absolutely. That's exactly what they're doing. They're recycling money back to their friends who are giving it back to them.
So these $500 million loans from the federal government under Obama are basically, in a way, it's just graft and corruption in plain English. Do you think
There's
anybody
no
involved
about
in this? Do you, right, Jack. So that's what I'm saying. You went away for how many years?
3.5 years, a little more than 3.5 years.
And they were not easy. I mean, but what I read in your book, this was not an easy time. I mean, they went after you in prison, didn't they?
Yeah, it was horrible. Every minute in prison was terrible.
But people like to believe, oh, you went to a white-collar prison, and it's a university, and it's easy. By what I read in your book, they harassed you to death in that prison.
Yeah, there really aren't any white-collar prisons left. 90% of the people in prison are there for drug offenses, and they're inner-city drug dealers, and, you know, they're not exactly white-collar criminals.
So, Jack, what message do you have for the listeners to the Savage Nation? You wrote a book called Capital Punishment, which is your story, and I highly recommend it. But watching what Obama is getting away with, what hope do we have that any of these crooks will be caught and punished?
Well, there's very little hope, because it's unlikely that the upper echelon of his Justice Department will focus on it in the way that Bush and his Justice Department focused on at least the Republicans who were involved in some of this activity. And the problem, I think, ultimately is that year in, year out, somebody's going to be doing this stuff. We need to change these rules in the Congress and in the laws that they abide by so that it is all illegal. The bigger problem isn't what they're doing that's illegal. What's the problem is that what they're doing is legal, and that's the greatest crisis here.
Jack, you just said that the Bush administration Justice Department went after you, while the Holder Justice Department won't go after any of the Democrat crooks who are violating the law. Why is that? What, are they less honest than the Bush guys?
Well, they're running the Democratic playbook. During the Clinton administration, I was personally involved with a criminal referral that came down from the House of Representatives about the Interior Department, where they were wantonly breaking the law. It was sent over to Janet Reno, and she put it in a shredder. They didn't do a thing about it. So they're running.
Who was the AG under Bush who went after you?
Well, the criminal division went after me. It was under, started under Ashcroft. But, you know, look, I broke the law. I don't want to make this
No, I know you did, and you admit it. And you said that you got arrogant, and you got egotistical, arrogant, and you got blind, and you made a lot of mistakes. You admit it. But by what I'm seeing, Jack, they're doing a lot worse right now than what you did.
Well, they are certainly doing things that are repugnant, and the American people are upset about it. The question is whether the Republicans, to be honest with you, are going to be able to convince people that they're any different, because at the end of the day, all of these politicians are engaged in this. This isn't just Democrats, although, to be honest with you, they're better at it than the Republicans, but it's not just them, and we've got to get some real changes here, or frankly, this country is going to continue to spend our money until we're broke. We are broke. I guess it's too late.
Yeah, I don't want to, you know, make this a bad scene for you, like with the Indians and what you ripped them off. But I mean, you admit that you did that, and you got carried away. But I see things going on at a much higher level than the alleged $30 million that you took with your partners. That there was restitution made, wasn't there?
Well, we're paying restitution. I mean, my situation got complicated by the media. At the end of the day, what I did wrong vis-a-vis my clients was I didn't inform them about some of the profit that I was sharing in, but my clients ultimately, I feel, didn't really get ripped off in terms of the value. They got ripped off in terms of what I informed them of, but it's complicated. What's going on now, though, in terms of what we're seeing, is a little different. What's going on now is, in essence, the rape of the government. Okay, not necessarily clients who are suffering, but all of us are suffering because these guys are going after the booty that's out there in the money.
I understand. So, Jack Abramoff, did Kevin Spacey do a good job or a fairly good job in portraying your story?
I really love him as an actor. I think he's fantastic, and he's
so
a good guy. He came and visited me in prison, but I got to tell you, the movie was a little off, let's just say.
It was. I mean, like, I don't want to get personal. Was your wife not portrayed accurately, or what did he do? What was the worst part of it?
Well, I mean, it was really a lot of it. Most of it was inaccurate. My wife was certainly portrayed inaccurately. My wife, whose mother died of lung cancer, is one of the biggest anti-smoking people you could ever meet in terms of personal behavior, and he has her smoking in the movie. So
it's just emblematic. I remember that scene where you say to her, the character, rather, Spacey says to her after he's been caught, when did you take up smoking? And she says, I did so tonight. I thought that was laughable. Look, the whole thing was made that Republicans were evil and bad and corrupt, and the Democrats were all good. In fact, the most laughable part of Casino Jack was when the girlfriend of your ex-partner goes and rats him out because he was cheating on her. And guess who the savior is inside the FBI? A dead ringer for Obama. Remember that one?
Yes, I do. That was astonishing. Yeah.
Now that leads us to the next area, and it's another reason I wanted to have you back on the Savage Nation, Jack. You have been a movie producer, and the last you were on, we talked. Are you back in the film business?
I am. I'm setting up movie projects, as you know, takes a while. I'm in the midst of doing it. These are not necessarily films like Casino Jack. They're not political films. But I am back doing that. That's one of the things I'm trying to get going.
I've had people ask me to do a Savage docudrama, meaning a story of my life with me playing me and a lot of archival photos, just as a straight-out documentary. They told me with 10 million listeners alone, you know, at 10 bucks ahead, it's $100 million gross. Do you agree with them?
I have to tell you, I do. I think it would be a fascinating story, and you've got to get the right documentarian to do it. But I have to tell you, I think it would be amazing.
Well, you know, it's interesting, without just indulging myself, it is one of the topics I wanted to talk about. I have a friend who's done some big, big movies. He's very conservative, so I won't mention his name, because otherwise he will never do another movie again. But he told me that just through the independent theaters, the independent theaters that are not controlled by the chains, he said there are something like 800 of them, or I don't know how many he said there are. He said you can start by distributing an independent film through the independent theaters that will star for product. Is that accurate in your opinion?
Yeah, I think so. Again, everything's going to come down to what kind of film it is. Is it a good film, well made? Certainly the story is fantastic, but you can mess up a fantastic story. You've got to get the right artist to come in there and do the right kind of thing. And I think you could have an incredible hit if you did it right.
Why don't we do it together? You want to do it with me?
I would be honored to do it with you. Absolutely.
All right. I think Jack Abramoff might produce the Michael Savage story. No, I mean, Ray, I like you, Jack. I like how you have the guts to have, you know, let's face it, you paid the price, man. You went to jail. I don't know how many people would come out and still have the guts to go on altogether without being broken from the experience. And, you know, here you are. You're still functioning. You're back there. And moreover, that Jack, you didn't say you're innocent. You still don't say you're innocent. You admit you made mistakes and you were guilty, right?
Exactly, I did. Sadly, I wish I could say otherwise, but I can't.
Now you know what's interesting to me on top of it all is that you played football as a student at Beverly Hills High School. You were a football player.
Yes, I was. Right.
You grew up in Beverly Hills. That was where you grew up as a kid.
I did. I grew up in Beverly Hills. I actually recently, for the first time in 30 years, saw my old high school football coach for dinner, and he had a few things to say to me. I can tell you.
Do you still live in the area? Can you tell us that on the show?
I live outside of Washington D.C. still. Yeah, since 1981.
No, because I go down to Beverly Hills on a fairly regular basis, and I'm one of the few people from San Francisco who actually likes L.A. I find it a dynamic, exciting, younger city than this old, sad, beatnik city that I live in. I mean, I love the environment up here. It's just a very depressing environment, San Francisco, in so many ways. The people look beaten up, and they're very, very politically skewed in only one direction. There's no diversity here of thought at all. Anyway, Jack, yeah, are there any other ideas you'd like to leave my audience with here on the Savage Nation?
Yeah, basically that America's got to pay attention to the corruption in Washington and what is going on, the very things you raise every night. People have got to pay attention, and a movement is afoot, and I'm involved with it, to do something about this, legislatively and politically. And I think we're going to see more about it, and I'll keep you informed, of course, in the next few months. We've got to do something, otherwise we're going to go over that cliff and never come back.
Well, you know, I believe that. That's why I wrote Trickle Down Tyranny, which I'm going to send a copy to you, by the way. I think you'll serve all people understand what I'm saying. How does Obama get away with these things? Is it because he owns the press? The press is compliant? What is it? What is this? There's absolutely no criticism of this man.
Well, they're not merely compliant. I think what they're doing is they remember well what happened between Bill Clinton's election in 1992 and 1994. They criticized Bill Clinton. They criticized what he was doing. They played the usual iconoclast, and they lost the Congress. I think they made a conscious decision at that point that will never happen to them again. They guard Obama. They will protect his flank. And anybody who thinks otherwise just has to turn the television on, and they'll see differently.
Jack Abramoff, thank you very much for taking the time to be with us on the Savage Nation. I'm going to get your email address. We're going to talk, and maybe we'll do the Michael Savage story.
That'd be wonderful. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
I went on to a mountain this morning. I normally bicycle in the morning, not early, late in the morning, after I've done all my emails and had the breakfast and calculated how much cholesterol versus how much fish oil versus how much vitamin E versus how many milligrams of this and milligrams of that, before I titrated my body ready for another day on the slopes of America. Then I go out in a bike ride, but I didn't want to ride today. I'm bored out of my mind. So I hiked up a mountain in the San Francisco Bay Area because it's eerily like a very, very spring day here. There's no rain. There's a terrible drought. People are enjoying the weather naturally, and myself included. And so I go up to an eerily quiet mountain in the Bay Area and hike by myself. And I look at the rocks, and I try to say to myself, Michael, you're a trained scientist. You're in the media, which is a pretty low-life job to begin with. You try to elevate the dialogue to a certain extent in what you do. You don't succeed, obviously, because the people only want to hear the mud. They don't want to hear about anything above the mud, the layer at the bottom of the ocean. They want to lay with the crustaceans, because apparently the politicians today are like crustaceans. Zero leadership. And I look at this, and I realize that the rocks I'm looking at on top of this mountain, these bluish rocks, were a result of a cataclysm that began about 165 million years ago. And they were thrown up into the air, onto the surface of the earth at that time, onto the top of this mountain. You say, well, wait, now you're getting off the track. Now you're talking about serpentine rocks on the top of a mountain. What does that have to do with Newt Gingrich and the election and Obama the communist? Well, I don't know what it has to do with it. I mean, you know, you ask yourself, if you're in this business, try to put some perspective on this. You have one gang of interests versus another gang of interests. They're called Democrat gang, Republican gang. You have two competing philosophies as to how the economy should be run. One gang says, take from everybody who earns and gives it to the non-earners. Tax those who work and don't tax those who earn very little. The other people say, wait a minute, that's not fair. But fundamentally, there's no difference in them socially. So now we have Newt Gingrich, who claims that a fiscal conservative candidate is bad. So what does he want? The answer is, if you're stupid enough to not understand this, I can't help you. That's why today I had to pull myself out of all of this and go up to the serpentine rich areas of this mountain and look at some of the mountaintop. And as I'm looking at the rocks, I got to tell you, it's related to the economy in a way. I know I'm a little, you know, discursive here, but I look at the big rocks on the top of this mountain, and they're made up of magnesium, nickel, cobalt, chromium, etc. And I think back to the Civil War that almost bankrupted America, and I realize that here in California, in the neighboring state of Nevada, we had, which was once the largest silver stores, I think, discovered at the time, the Comstock Lode. And do you know that the Comstock Lode of silver was used to pay off the Civil War debt? Now, think of what I just said to you. The war cost a great deal of money. The war nearly bankrupted America. But in those days, the politicians couldn't just print money. The money was tied to silver and gold. And so they used the silver, the minerals, in other words, in the earth of Nevada, the natural resources of Nevada, to pay off the war debt. Now, speed the clock forward. We have the Iraq War, which cost this country about $3 trillion, according to some estimates. Those ungrateful SOBs in Iraq have not sent us so much as a barrel of oil, because we haven't taken it, nor have we demanded it. You know what I feel about that. We should have taken the oil to pay off the war debt, at the very least. But the war debt was never paid off, and that was the beginning of our bankruptcy. Now, you can blame the welfare state all you want, and believe me, there's plenty of blame for the welfare state in terms of our bankrupt state. But the fact of the matter is, it was the war in Iraq that probably began the road that we will never come back from. We have not yet paid off the Iraq war debt. We're not paying off the Afghanistan war debt. Where in the world do you expect this to come from? I ask myself every day, when in fact they're not paying off the debt. What should we talk about? Serpentine rocks? Would you like me to talk about hiking on the mountain today? Serpentine rocks? And the fact that within 110 years, everyone listening to the show will be dead? Do you realize we all share something in common? We're all traversing through the universe at the same time. And that within 110 or so years, everyone listening to this program, in fact, everyone on the planet, whether they were just born or they're 95 years old, will be off this planet. You'll be gone. And you'll just be part of the compost, if at all. And that when you look at a mountain like this and you realize that it was created about 165 million years ago, you know, you realize that life unto itself is a miracle. Our place on this earth is miraculous. It's only for a short dance in the sun that we're here to begin with. How much can I talk about what these empty suits from television have to say about reality? How much can we take of this? What country are we living in that we permit this to go on? How did the system devolve to this point that we the people don't even vote and we watch others vote? How can we take any more of this? Can't we have the election? Can we call for the election 10 months early? Think of all the billions of dollars that could be saved if we said Obama versus upping it all right now. For the sake of the economy, for the sanity of the American people, we're holding it. Get it over with. Savage.